The Ing Factor.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us this morning. It's the Morning Open, a look at the economy as we kick things off and kick off the trading day about 20 minutes in. Earnings for the corporations, filings for the unemployed, and coping with homelessness in the big city. But first, where's Wall Street? Up right now, the S&P up about 1%, same for the NASDAQ, the Dow up about 0.75%. European markets are up by about an average of 1% at this hour, and in Asia, shares were mostly higher today. Julie Neiman is an analyst at Smith Moore & Company. She joins us live this morning from St. Louis. Hi, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
Earnings reports. Dow Chemical this morning reported it lost nearly $500 million in its second quarter, but in its assessment, the CEO said that the U.S. economy has apparently found the bottom. How is his crystal ball any different from anyone else's?
Well, he was gasping a little bit as he said it. You know, basically, he's looking at the economy maybe bottoming here. And his cheery news was, eventually we will recover. What he is seeing right now is customers are beginning to restock. They've really gone through all of their inventory. They make for plastic bags all the way to autos. They're beginning to restock a little bit, but we're not seeing significant sales growth. It's all cost-cutting. Now, DuPont's going to be announcing as well. They get real growth because it's from agriculture. And agriculture is seeing a big expansion this year. We'll have to see what their industrial chemicals are doing, too. This may be just a flash in the pan.
I couldn't help notice, Julie, that Kellogg was also among the winners this morning in its earnings. We're talking cereal. Is that the golden ticket these days? And what other companies are seeing some genuine growth right now?
Cereal is not just for breakfast anymore. That's what happens during recessions is people eat a lot of cereal, and they can't keep it on the shelves. It's really going very well. All of the bakers, like Kellogg, are looking at stable commodity costs and huge sales increases because of the recession. Yeah. So this is where you're seeing top-line growth.
Indeed. Julie Neiman, thanks.
You bet.
We do appreciate it. The Labor Department says a number of newly laid off workers filing first-time claims for jobless benefits rose last week by 25,000. The housing market still has yet to find spark. A new report on national foreclosures shows we've set a new record. For the last 4 months, more than 300,000 households received foreclosure notices. And as Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports, the second wave of the mortgage mess is just starting to set in.
Foreclosures continue to swamp states like California, Nevada, and Florida. But now areas that didn't have high rates of subprime mortgages are starting to feel the pain.
Places like Boise, Idaho, and Fayetteville, Arkansas, places that have not been foreclosure hotspots but are now entering the fray.
That's Rick Sharga with RealtyTrack, an online database of foreclosed properties. The company's new report shows that instead of bad loans, this latest wave of foreclosures is due to the bad economy and job losses.
That wave of foreclosure activity will probably take us through the middle of next year, assuming that unemployment peaks sometime late this year or early 2010.
Sharga predicts a third wave of foreclosures will strike in the middle of next year. That's when a new batch of risky mortgages resets to higher rates, potentially leaving many homeowners underwater. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Thursday, July 30th, 2009, at Marketplace.org. The Internet's making snail mail less and less needed. Oh, yeah. Private delivery competition? You bet. The post office has seen a 20% drop in mail volume and now is in a heap of debt, $10 billion worth. Today, a congressional committee wants to look at what the U.S. Postal Service is proposing to bring costs down. Here's Marketplace's John Dimsdale.
The Government Accountability Office will testify today that the Postal Service has been added to the list of government agencies at high risk for financial failure. The GAO's Philip Herr doesn't expect the volume of mail to return anytime soon.
Their financial situation's deteriorating. At this point, they don't expect to cover their expenses and obligations in fiscal years 2009 and 10.
That's despite a 2-cent increase in stamp prices in May and lots of cost-cutting. Fewer employees, fewer street corner mailboxes. Deputy Postmaster General Patrick Donahue says more than 90% of today's delivery service is automated.
When the letter carrier who comes around to your neighborhood delivers the mail, he or she never touches it until they take it out of the tray and put it into your mailbox. It's already sorted for them the whole way through the system.
Donahue says USPS is trying to minimize cutbacks in customer service, but 3,200 post office branches nationwide are slated to be closed. And if Congress gives the okay, home mail delivery on Saturdays will be dropped, saving $3.5 billion a year. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
As progress on ensuring Chinese products exported to the U.S. are safe, the head of the Consumer Product Safety Commission, Inez Tenenbaum, said today on a trip to China, her department will set up its first permanent office in Beijing later this year. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
The office still needs final approval from Chinese authorities. The country's been the source of poisoned pet food, chemical-laced milk, and lead-painted toys in the last couple of years. I reached economist Andy Rothman as he was strolling through a Chinese mall today in Shanghai.
I don't think anybody in China, the government or population in general, wants to have their country known as a place that ships shoddy or dangerous goods. It's certainly not in their economic interest.
Rothman says the Chinese government has been cracking down on producers that cut corners. He says having a U.S. regulatory presence on the ground will help.
But I think we can't get our hopes up that having a couple of inspectors in Beijing is going to solve the problem for American consumers, given how many thousands of factories are exporting. The onus really has to come on the American companies that are bringing these products into the U.S.
The Consumer Product Safety Commission's new Beijing office is set to open in October. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
If you're a criminal looking for a place to ply your trade, you might want to avoid Lancaster, Pennsylvania. The bucolic town west of Philadelphia will soon have the most security cameras per capita of any city in the state, and maybe any city in the nation. But as Joel Rose reports, people in Lancaster aren't as concerned about cameras as they are about who's watching them.
By the end of the month, 165 cameras will provide live, round-the-clock video of just about every street in Lancaster. And it all feeds back here to the nerve center, where someone can monitor and manipulate dozens of cameras.
What we're seeing now is sort of a typical day in the life of Lancaster. And
Joe Morales directs the Lancaster Community Safety Coalition. There wasn't much to see the day I stopped by. Just a few of Lancaster's 56,000 residents walking the dog or hanging out in the park. But Morales says these cameras have helped the police catch drug dealers, thieves, even a murderer.
We are an extension of any good neighbor in your community who might see somebody breaking into a car and call the police. We are a digital neighborhood watch program.
What makes Lancaster's surveillance program different from most is that Morales and his fellow crime watchers do not work for the city. Lancaster's crime rate is about twice the national average. So 5 years ago, local businesses started raising the roughly $2.5 million it took to build and operate the network. If the city had to foot the bill, Lancaster Mayor Rick Gray says it wouldn't exist.
If it came down to us doing it, it would not be done at all. We could not afford it and afford our current police department.
Lancaster isn't the first city to outsource its security camera network to an independent organization, but for some, the arrangement raises concerns about privacy. The cameras record footage that could be very valuable to, for instance, an unscrupulous divorce lawyer. That's one reason Lancaster resident Bill Bortz says he'd feel better if the police ran the cameras.
The police have a code of ethics. The overall idea of the group would maybe have high ethics, but people can be people.
And that makes you a little nervous.
It does.
But the Lancaster Community Safety Coalition's director, Joe Morales, says his organization also has high ethical standards because it has to.
If we mess this up, if we are not above suspicion, if we are not ethically sound, we won't be around very long.
Morales says property crime in the city has dropped about 10% since the cameras came online, but the city's violent crime rate hasn't changed. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania, I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
Anytime two things, people, chemicals, banks, get together, there's always a chance they're not going to mix. The Wall Street Journal reported this week about a ruckus over at Nomura Holdings, which bought part of Lehman Brothers. Now, Nomura appears to have offended some of its new employees when it trained women bankers to serve tea and wear their hair a certain way. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports that for merged financial institutions, cultural differences can cause some uneasy withdrawals.
Culture clashes don't just happen in international mergers. Danny Sarch is a Wall Street recruiter. He told me about one guy who went through a merger. He tangled with a new boss over how to prepare a spreadsheet.
There are little things that are just the pebble in somebody's shoe that create this crescendo of annoyances.
Take the Bank of America Merrill Lynch deal. The so-called Walmart of banks has struggled to absorb Merrill's thundering herd of brokers. Sarch says one of the key differences is pay.
Merrill Lynch's people from the trading areas to the salespeople are used to essentially eating what they kill, meaning that if you perform X, you know you're going to get paid Y. And typically at a commercial bank, it's just not as simple as that.
That's made Sarch's job as a headhunter a little easier. He's hired to lure Wall Street rainmakers to competing firms. As the annoyances pile up, he says people are more willing to jump ship. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Comes to homelessness, it shouldn't surprise you that the recession has made matters worse as people are losing jobs and their homes at a higher rate. This morning we focus on one city, the biggest one in our nation, that's having a particularly tough time dealing with its growing homeless population. From the Big Apple, here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
Nothing's cheap in New York, certainly not housing, and the temporary apartments used to accommodate the homeless are nearly full. Robert Hess is the commissioner of the city's Department of Homeless Services.
We're seeing applicants for shelter increase about 30% more this year than last year at the same time.
So city officials this week put some tough new policies in place. They make it easier to eject people from shelters for minor infractions like staying out past curfew.
We do not view shelter as a home. We view shelter as short-term, temporary, and emergency services to help stabilize families that are in crisis with all the dignity and respect that they deserve.
Dignity and respect aren't the first words that come to mind at the city's main homeless intake center. It's in the South Bronx, one of New York's poorest and most dangerous neighborhoods. Hundreds of families file in the door in search of shelter and come right back out again after being found ineligible for housing.
They tell me I have to come back after 12 o'clock in the morning to apply for overnight. Come on, I have two kids, you know. They shouldn't be doing that.
That's a woman who called herself only Marisol. She says authorities told her to stay with her aunt Gina, but Gina says she's got no room.
I got like 10 people in my house right now. I'm supposed to fit, what, five more, four more? No, I got my own family.
This drama in the South Bronx may sound worlds away, but homelessness is up all over the country. Professor Dennis Culhane studies the issue at the University of Pennsylvania. He says even if we're at the beginning of a recovery, homeless levels could still be on the rise for some time.
This recession could sort of blow a hole in the safety net, and the homeless system that is out there is simply not sufficient in its capacity to deal with the potential problem.
New York's taken an out-of-sight, out-of-mind approach to save on long-term shelter for the homeless. The city is now buying one-way tickets to places where homeless families have relatives or friends who'll take them in. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Finally, discriminating is never nice unless you're talking about taste. And it's Nevada Senator Harry Reid who introduced a bill that speaks to the taste of government bureaucrats and asks them not to discriminate. We're not talking about people or American goods. It's all about resort cities. The Protecting Resort Cities from Discrimination Act of 2009 wants to undue hardship for places that are a bit over the top. Seems Las Vegas, which, by the way, is in Nevada, got a bum rap at the height of the recession, even from President Obama for its lack of austerity as meeting places go. And Reid wants to make sure every place has an equal shot to host fun government meetings. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Thursday.
American Public Media.